From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. And on this episode, part two of the story of Mauricio Hernandez.
I started to have a lot of hallucinations, my kids' faces in the sky, and I will scream their names and telling them that I'm sorry. And I will cry, and then I will laugh. I was getting nuts. I started to remember when I was a kid, when I was a boy, what I did right, what I did wrong. I was preparing myself to die.
Unfictional is a program of true stories, personal documentaries, and radio movies. And on this episode, Mauricio Across the Border, Part 2. If you haven't listened to Part 1 yet, you should probably go back and listen to last week's episode. After living in the United States for 20 years undocumented, Mauricio has now returned to Mexico City to start a Mexican version of the TV reality show Pimp My Ride. His plan is to come back to the U.S. legally, where he has a family waiting, and he promised them he'd be home by Christmas. The reporter is Levi Bridges, and from KCRW, it's Unfictional and Mauricio Across the Border, Part 2.
Mauricio grew up in a historic neighborhood where a guy rides a bicycle through the streets at night, selling tamales.
The tamale guy, you know, it's a really popular thing over here in Mexico.
The street Mauricio grew up on is like a parody of what you'd expect.
I used to miss this.
It's in a car neighborhood, lined with parts stores and mechanics who specialize in different repairs.
Every business here is about cars. Bolts, cables, batteries, radiators. They sell engines. And the other side, they fix transmission. The other side, they fix the suspension.
Mauricio used to ride his bike through here, peering in at what the mechanics were doing on his way back home.
Well, this is the house.
The house Mauricio grew up in is small, painted green, shaded by tall palm trees that his grandfather planted.
Now my uncle lives there.
When Mauricio left L.A., it was his first time back here in nearly 20 years. His first time in Mexico as an adult. And he realized there were parts of his own identity that he hadn't really explored.
If you go outside Mexico and live outside your country for 20 years, you come back to your country and it's like coming back home. You feel so more Mexican. If you were Mexican, you feel 2,000% more Mexican.
Mauricio's got tattoos all over his arms, including a huge West Coast Customs logo. And when he got to Mexico, he started adding tons of new ones, of important figures in Mexican culture and history.
Tengo a Zapata, Pancho Villa, Miguel Hidalgo, Benito Juárez, San Quetzalcóatl, Coyuzauqui, San José Ortiz de Domínguez.
Mauricio left Mexico with dreams of being on television. But what's extraordinary about Mauricio is his wildest dream did come true, just not on the side of the U.S. border he would have expected. Once Mauricio got back to Mexico, the two guys who brought the West Coast Customs brand to Mexico came up with this idea to launch a version of Pimp My Ride in Spanish. And Mauricio became the host. They called the show Túneme la Nave. It's a direct translation of Pimp My Ride that's so perfect. It's almost poetic.
To me, when they say we're going to record the show, to me it was a test. Let's see what happens.
Mauricio didn't get his hopes up. They made a pilot, but nobody was sure whether it would go anywhere. The idea was that people would send in pictures of their cars each week. Mauricio would choose which one would get tuned up.
Ay, por favor, no soy mala onda, tené la nave, mi hermano, por favor.
Mauricio designed most of the show himself. He didn't want there to be any acting, not like on Pimp My Ride. But most of all, he wanted the show to be funny.
I wanted it to put the salsa in it. Mexicans, we always want to put chili in it. We want to put lemon in it. We want to put salt in it. So I wanted to put the spices in it, you know?
And the result was like a blend of the Three Stooges and Pimp My Ride, where workers bumble around the body shop, spilling paint thinner on each other.
Hey, churumas, ¿qué te pasa?
The show got picked up by TV Azteca, one of Mexico's main television channels.
And after the show aired, it hit big. I had fans from 5 years old to 70 years old, 80 years old.
Suddenly, Mauricio's show was being broadcast to every state in Mexico. Mauricio became famous in his own country. He was literally the exhibit of Mexico's Pimp My Ride.
Siempre existe un líder en cualquier proyecto. Él es Mauricio.
Jaciel, vamos a cumplir tu sueño realidad.
Nobody told me, you know, you're gonna become famous. You've seen a lot of people starting to recognize me.
Not long after the show started to air, Mauricio went to downtown Coyoacán, not far from the Mexico City neighborhood where he grew up. A crowd of people surround him.
They start asking me for a picture, and then it was an autograph, and then it was a picture, and then it was an autograph. It was full of people, you know, so I couldn't move. I just started walking fast, and everybody was following me, and, hey, come on, come back.
When you were a kid, you really always wanted to be on TV. Did you think about that part of it? Like, you know, that like you couldn't just go out of the house anymore and be a normal guy? Like, were you aware that that was part of the deal?
Of course. I mean, when you're a little kid, I mean, you never thought about being a famous. I always wanted to be in television.
Mauricio didn't let it go to his head. He was flattered by the attention. And pimping out cars for free? That felt so good in a country like Mexico, where it's way harder for people to afford things. Where material things, especially cars, can sometimes have way more value than in the U.S.
When you buy your first car in Mexico, it's like you take care of your car like for a long, long time. People of Mexico, we love the car. We love our car. The car is part of the family. Like, you talk to them, you call them your baby, you put a name on the car. I can say, if Mexicans, we can put our car inside the living room and watch TV with the car, we would do that. That's how we are, you know, Mexican people, that's how we are.
Tu Nombre La Nave was supposed to be kind of a comedy, but the show would also get emotional. People were really moved when they saw the finished cars.
I had a like sadness inside of me because it was hard for me to see people crying, see people getting really sentimental. I wanted to cry with them, you know? So at the end of the recording sessions, I would go to my office, close the door, and I remember I used to cry a lot.
Mauricio is a genuine kind of guy. And that came through in the show. I think it's probably part of why fans were so drawn to him. But Mauricio says the attention he was getting in Mexico created a rift between him and Ryan, the owner of West Coast Customs.
I don't want to call it jealousy, but when I became a celebrity in Mexico with his brand, I guess he felt like kind of jealous. And I totally understand that, but it was not something that I planned.
Mauricio says that Ryan eventually came down to Mexico for an event promoting West Coast.
And we sit down on the table signing autographs, and we had this line full of people that wanted to get an autograph. And I remember Ryan was right next to me, and people would come to me to get an autograph. I was already like thinking, this guy is going to get mad because people didn't recognize him.
Mauricio says that after just a few minutes, Ryan got up from the table and left.
So I felt something was wrong, because I knew him.
So Mauricio went to check in with Ryan. He wanted to know what happened.
He's like, nothing. Are you sure? And he told me, yeah, I'm sure. Why don't you go and take care of your fans? They all want you. And after that, it wasn't the same.
It didn't just affect their friendship. Mauricio says when Ryan sold them the franchise, they made an agreement.
Ryan was supposed to give me a visa back so I could go and see my kids. So I can come back and keep working for West Coast Customs in the States. That was part of the deal that we made before I was coming to Mexico.
Mauricio tried talking to Ryan about the visa, but he says Ryan just kind of ghosted on him. Ryan didn't talk to me for this story, so you won't be hearing from him. I reached out to him a few times, and his publicist sent me an email saying they wish Mauricio our very best. When I first talked about all this with Mauricio 5 years ago, I get the impression he was kind of upset with Ryan. But that's not how Mauricio describes what happened.
Did you feel like he betrayed you in any way by not saying, oh yeah, of course, I'll get right on this and bring you back. I know you want to come home. Like, how do you feel? How would you describe it?
Not betrayed, but yeah, left. Left alone. I kind of abandoned, just abandoned me. Probably, it's not that I wasn't important to him, but it's just like, I didn't want him to feel like that. Like that, oh, I have to do it. Oh, I have to bring this guy. I wanted it for him to come out from his heart. I would have liked for him to love to do it. Like, when can I bring you back? How can I bring you back?
Mauricio was really stranded in Mexico. Getting his own TV show, becoming famous, that was not part of the plan. And despite all the cool things that ended up happening, Mauricio wasn't planning on staying in Mexico.
I had a promise to my kids in the States, and my promise was that I was going to come back on Christmas Eve so I could be with them, you know?
He'd been in Mexico for about 6 months. By this point, it was summer 2009. Time was ticking. And if he was going to make it in time for Christmas, Mauricio realized he couldn't count on Ryan anymore to get there.
I was like, if he doesn't want to help me, then I'm going to do it.
So Mauricio says he tried applying for a tourist visa. People who don't earn a lot of money in Mexico often get denied visas because folks in U.S. consulates think they're just trying to find a way to work in the U.S. But a Mexican television host? Easy.
The people at the embassy, they ask me, you know, have you ever been in the States? Which I say no. And at that moment, they told me, okay, well, your visa is approved. But then a week after, the embassy called me up and told me that they had to go again. You know, it was some kind of problem. I went to the appointment, and the same consul, he do an interview to me again. And he asked me right away, he said, why you lied to me?
The consular workers investigated Mauricio. He still had a record from that time during the LA riots, when the cops found Mauricio and his cousins taking beer from the looted convenience store.
So they give me a 5-year penalty to get into the United States. But because I had that promise with my kids about me going to see them on Christmas Eve, I had to be there, get there. No matter how, I just wanted to get there.
From KCRW, it's Unfictional. I'm Bob Carlson, and this episode is called Mauricio Across the Border, Part 2. And coming up, Mauricio decides to take matters into his own hands and cross back into the U.S. illegally through the mountains. That's in a moment.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and you're listening to Unfictional, and an episode called Mauricio Across the Border, Part 2. The reporter is Levi Bridges.
Mauricio was committed to reuniting with his kids. He only planned on being gone from LA for 4 months. Now, almost a year had gone by. He'd already missed out on a lot of their life, helping Ryan build West Coast Customs.
I wasn't the perfect dad, but I can tell you that I was always trying to be the perfect dad.
And he was damned if he wasn't going to keep this promise. So Mauricio did something really bold. There was really only one way he could get back to his family. He went up to Tecate, a Mexican town on the border with California, and hired a coyote, a smuggler, to take him over the border.
It was $5,000, which I was gonna pay to cross, and they were gonna cross me through the mountains. At that moment, I can tell you, honestly, I was scared.
He was afraid of getting caught by the border patrol, of getting locked up, spending Christmas in jail instead of with his kids, maybe never getting back to California at all.
It was hard to cross. At that moment, they had so much security around the border.
Crossing the border is dangerous. Thousands of migrants have died trying to get to the U.S. many trying to reunite with their families. And here was Mauricio, a Mexican celebrity, a guy with a national TV show, making good money, walking through the arid borderlands, like countless other migrants. Mauricio met up with two coyotes in Tecate, who planned to sneak him over the border, walking, with a group of migrants who were also trying to reach the U.S.
We were like about 12 people, 15 people. I remember it was people from Oaxaca, it was people from Guatemala.
The coyotes told them all to empty their pockets, just get rid of everything they had.
An ID, a cell phone, keys, coins, bills, wallet. You couldn't take anything than just water.
They set off around midnight, slipped under a barbed wire fence, and started walking through the darkness. Tecate is a small city in the mountains east of San Diego, Tijuana. It's high, semi-desert country with scrappy shrubs and these massive boulders scattered everywhere. Before they left, the coyotes made sure that nobody, especially not the border patrol, could track them.
They gave us this carpet with some wire and whatever you were wearing. If you were wearing boots, tennis shoes, whatever, you had to put carpet on the bottom so you don't make the footprints.
With the pieces of carpet attached under everyone's shoes, Mauricio says they took off trudging up into the mountains. The coyotes were walking fast, really fast. Something about them didn't seem right to Mauricio.
So I knew a lot of people doing different drugs, and I knew those two guys were getting high on the way. I knew the smell of crystal meth, and I caught them like a couple of times smoking. And that's why they were walking so fast. They were not getting tired, and they were not, I don't know, I had that feeling that something was wrong.
As they walked into the darkness behind these two methed out coyotes, the temperature kept dropping.
It was cold. It was in December. I remember it was really cold. I had this badass jacket.
One of those big puffy jackets for winter.
And it was really, really warm. But it was making that noise. It was that kind of material that makes noise. So I remember that guy told me, he's like, you know what, you cannot go with that jacket.
The coyote told Mauricio he had to throw the jacket away. Any sort of extra noise, it might draw attention to their group from Border Patrol. Mauricio said he wasn't going to walk without a jacket. So the coyote gave him his.
His was cutting. He gave me this crappy-ass jacket.
They crisscrossed up into the mountains, back and forth, following an unmarked trail of switchbacks.
And I was already tired. I was really tired. It was really tough, like going through those mountains.
I've seen those mountains. They are steep.
I knew, you know, physically, I wasn't prepared.
Why? Were you just not in good shape?
No, I wasn't in good shape. I was never doing exercise. I smoke a lot.
Mauricio was having trouble keeping up with the group. Eventually, they all stopped in a cave up in the mountains. Mauricio collapsed on the ground.
I just remember they told us just to wait there. And I could hear them like smoking outside because you could hear the lighter going. But because I was so tired, I don't know. It happened in one snap, you know? But I was tired. I don't remember like sleeping for a long time, but I do remember when I woke up, there was nobody at the cave. At first, I thought they're all outside, you know? And when I went outside, it was nobody. Nobody.
The coyotes abandoned him out there. This is actually pretty common. As a reporter covering immigration and the border, you hear lots of stories about stragglers getting abandoned by coyotes during border crossings. Mauricio was out there all alone, with nothing. The coyotes had made everyone empty their pockets.
But I kept my cell phone. I hide it.
Mauricio had the number of the guy back in Tecate who had arranged this trip, so he gave him a call.
He kind of like got mad first. But then he told me, stay there, we're gonna come and get you. It was scary. It was really scary because then I was alone, left out in the mountains. The only light we had was the moon. You could hear snakes. You could hear the bushes move.
You're like a city guy. Have you ever been out in the middle of nowhere by yourself like that?
No, of course not. No, no way. Never.
Mauricio was just out there, totally freaked out, waiting and waiting. But nobody ever came.
And after like half an hour, I called this guy. And when I tried to call him, there was no phone. They shut down the phone. It never went through again.
Mauricio started walking through the night, trying to find his way back to Tecate.
And I was already getting desperate. Even, you know what's funny? That I will see the border patrol like far away up in the hill. I will see the lights. I will scream, but they could hear me. I wanted to get caught by the immigration because I wanted to be safe.
But border patrol didn't see him. He kept walking through the cold night. It was getting harder to see.
The moon went away. It started getting cloudy. It started raining like really hard.
Now Mauricio was starting to panic. He kept tripping and falling in these deep depressions in the earth, bruising his arms and legs.
Now I couldn't see nothing, like nothing. Like you will have your eyes open and you will see only darkness. Just like a blind people, you know? But it was more desperate in it because you had your eyes open. I got panicked. I panic a lot, thinking I'm gonna die here. So I remember I started saying, Mauricio, start thinking what you gonna do.
He still had the cell phone. So when the rain died down, he called this Mexican emergency hotline.
And they told me, how much battery do you have? And I said, I don't have that much. Can you find out with a satellite where I am? I don't know, something.
But no. This was back in 2009. For the Generation Z kids in the room, the Find My Phone app wasn't really a thing yet. The people on the other end of the emergency hotline urged Mauricio to just stay in one place. Wait until morning.
I was already all wet because of the rain. And I started shaking. Like bad. Like really, really bad. I started to have a lot of hallucinations. My kids' faces in the sky. And I will scream their names and telling them that I'm sorry. And I will cry. And then I will laugh. I was getting nuts. I started to remember when I was a kid. When I was a boy. What I did right. What I did wrong. I was preparing myself to die. I remember I told God, I don't want to die like this, please. I don't want to die right here. The worst thing that went through my mind was like, I'm going to die here, and nobody's ever going to find my body.
Mauricio kept walking. Even after sunrise, Mauricio says there was this thick fog hanging over the mountains. It was still hard to see. He called the SOS number one last time.
And then this lady answered the phone. I told her I'm really desperate. I don't have that much battery anymore. I know it was the last shot that I was going to have. And I told her, please tell my mom, tell my kids that I love them, but I know I'm going to die here.
They kept talking, trying to get Mauricio to give them any details that might help them find him. As the sun rose higher, the fog lifted a bit, just enough to see the landscape ahead.
The land was like painted red. The trees, the bushes, everything was red.
All that red was a long ribbon of flame retardants that had been dropped from the air to put out a wildfire. The emergency hotline transferred Mauricio to a guy who knew the region well.
He's like, I know where you are. He told me that as long as I will see red, walk in that direction. That was the last call I couldn't make because then my phone shut out. I knew if I will follow the instructions, I was gonna save my life.
Mauricio kept walking, following the line of flame retardants over a hill. And at the top, the city of Tecate came into view. In the city below, Mauricio saw an ambulance that had been sent for him. He ran down the hills toward the arms of a paramedic.
He hugged me with his blanket, and I don't remember nothing else.
Later that night, he finally regained consciousness.
I woke up with all these bags full of water, warm, around my body. Like they couldn't believe it because I had a 90% of hypothermia in my body. That they couldn't believe how I survived.
When the doctors released Mauricio, he got on a plane back to Mexico City.
I was feeling sad. I was feeling empty. I was feeling happy.
Happy that he'd gotten a second chance at life. Sad and empty because he had run out of options to get back to his family in California. The trip over the border, almost dying, really traumatized Mauricio.
I was already having fearness of darkness. I had a panic. I couldn't sleep.
He couldn't bring himself to try crossing the border again on foot.
No way I was gonna try that again.
Now Mauricio had to confront a new reality, one where he wouldn't be living with his kids.
And my mind was like, I let him down, you know? I told him, well, I can't go anymore. I risked my life to see you guys and almost die. I'm sorry. I know they were young. They couldn't understand.
Mauricio started thinking about starting a new life in Mexico, staying there permanently. He asked his partner to join him.
Bring the kids, come over here, let's make a life together. She will always laugh. She will always laugh and say, do you think I'm gonna go there and leave the States then go back to Mexico? That's never gonna happen.
Not long after that conversation, Mauricio and his partner separated. Mauricio's kids came down to Mexico a few times to visit, but their relationship wasn't really the same. Things felt strained with all the distance. Over the years, they grew further apart. Today, they hardly talk.
Sometimes people get the chance in life to become a good father. And some of us, we just don't. For some reason, it doesn't happen. Because trust me that I try.
As Mauricio was trying to accept everything that happened, he threw himself back into producing the TV show in Mexico.
Like they say, you know, the show has to continue.
But doing the show wasn't the same.
I was missing my kids. I was missing a family life.
During season 3 of Tú no me la nave, Mauricio ended up hitting it off with someone he met on the show. They decided to start a family, and eventually had a daughter. Mauricio's other kids are all boys. He always wanted to have a girl.
I would always like to be around my sisters. I used to comb their hair, get them dressed up to take them to school. I used to pick them up from school. I wanted to have my own girl. I wanted to have my own daughter.
It felt like a second chance.
The love that I felt for my daughter is indescribable. You know, it's magic.
Mauricio's daughter was born during the last season of Tú no me la nave. TV Azteca canceled Tú no me in 2013 after 4 seasons. Mauricio said there were problems between the producers and the network. But even though this was the thing he dreamed of doing since he was a kid, losing the show didn't feel like that big of a deal, especially after everything else he'd been through.
I didn't really care. You know, we had the brand. We had a West Coast. We had a shop. So I was like, well, we don't have a t-show. Well, let's make cars, you know? I had this platform. I'm famous. I know how to work in cars. So I could just open up my new shop.
Mauricio was happy just running his body shop and being a father again. But it was a financial adjustment. After he lost the show, Mauricio says that lots of people he'd grown close to that he thought were his friends really just wanted to be around him because he was on TV. Or because he had money.
You'd rather be by yourself than be with somebody that probably is going to hurt you. Because that people that you say, that's my friend, it will probably end up stabbing you in the back.
A couple years later, Mauricio's new partner also left him, along with their daughter. And although Mauricio doesn't want to get into all the details, he says part of the reason is that she lost interest when Mauricio's show got canceled. They had to reduce their standard of living. Mauricio was just a guy working at a car shop now.
It really hurts me. The separation really hurts me a lot. I had a lot of times of depression.
Mauricio still had a national following in Mexico, and he'd hold events for his fans. He was struggling with depression, and a big part of his job now was trying to put on a happy exterior for the people who adored him.
What were you experiencing that you felt like you couldn't tell them?
My fans, they seen a strong Mauricio, but I couldn't be that guy. From inside, I was dying. A lot of people think being famous is easy, and it's hard. It's like you have to deal with your personal life and the life of the people that think they know you.
Mauricio says the love he got from his fans did help cheer him up, but only for a little while.
It's like a drug. You need that. But then when you turn off the light when the show is over, then you end up in the room with nobody. I didn't want to get recognized. I wanted to just cut my dreads, leave my cell phone, everything, grab a backpack and just go anywhere. I don't want nobody to know about me.
He ended up taking what might sound like a drastic step for a television celebrity in his mid-40s. He moved back home with his grandmother.
She said, well, I know where you're going through. Why don't you just come here? So I came back to that house. Being around my grandmother will always make me happy. Just listening to her, watching her walk, cook.
Being home was just what he needed. Mauricio's relationship with his ex in Mexico eventually improved. He sees his daughter regularly, and sometimes they do things as a family, even if they aren't together. Over time, he started to adjust, and Mauricio started opening up to his fans on social media about what he'd been through. He made himself vulnerable to them.
And I started getting a lot of messages asking me for help. I was starting to be a psychologist for my fans once they see me strong, asking me how I did it. Why would I lose a TV show, a family? How am I still strong, you know?
His fans started reaching out to him about their personal problems. People going through breakups or feeling depressed because they were overweight or lost their jobs. Some people reached out just because they were thinking about going to the U.S., to a place like California, like Mauricio did.
When you meet Mexicans who tell you that they want to go to the U.S., what do you tell them?
Not to go. It's not worth it.
When Mauricio was living in the U.S. as an undocumented immigrant, he always felt like a second-class citizen, like he was living in a country where he didn't belong. And he wants to spare Mexicans from experiencing that.
I had saved a lot of people from going to the States.
It's hard to say whether things would have worked out so well for Mauricio if he'd stayed in Mexico, whether he ever would have gotten a TV show or owned his own business. Living in the U.S. is part of what helped Mauricio make his wildest dreams come true. But along with all the good things that came out of that, being an immigrant also caused him a lot of pain. And he wouldn't wish that on anyone. Walking around Mauricio's old neighborhood in Mexico City, we talked about what it felt like coming back here for the first time after 20 years away. He says it was like a breath of fresh air after so many years suffocating in the U.S.
I feel like I could breathe again. I feel like I could be free again. I could be myself. I could walk the streets and not worry about anything.
It's Unfictional, and a story called Mauricio Across the Border, produced by Levi Bridges and edited by Carla Green. And coming up on the next episode of Unfictional, a man is rowing alone with a cat on a foolish quest across the fierce North Atlantic Ocean.
Nobody would survive in here in a small boat.
And he has to be rescued from below the cliffs of the remote Shetland Islands.
He was so happy that he got his accordion out and he started to play as we told him in teeth.
He makes so many friends there.
He was probably a bit of a novelty to us living in the small community.
The next year, he allows himself to be rescued again.
And I'm very happy to be together with you. You are some of the most beautiful people I ever have met in my life.
It's a real-life fairy tale of the sea, the rowing man. On the next episode of Unfictional, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Bob Carlson, the producer of Unfictional. Chrissy Barker provided vital production help, sings and plays the saw. Theme music by Alex Weston, with music help from Joe Augustine and Narrative Music. The managing producer of the program was Carla Green. And please join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.